Well, we continue in Samuel. We left last week with David and his episodes and the things going on in his life. But last week's lesson we understood, and he was told that all this wrongdoing that had gone on, that his family was going to continue to experience sin. And we're going to see that again today. It's kind of a lesson that's a little touchy to teach, but we'll get through it. But if you think about family, and if we were doing an acrostic, what would be some words that go with family, let's say, that maybe begin with the letter F?
Funny.
Friend.
Faithful.
Are we forgiving? Today, one word that'll come out is we're going to talk about is fidelity, or is that prevalent in families? But what about A? What should a family be?
An army together.
All together. Should we be accepting of our entire family? Are we always doing that? Should we provide our family members assurance that I'm here for you?
Should be attentive to our family too.
And attendant to our families, yep. Yep. M?
We should minister to them.
Minister? Should we show mercy to them? Is it our responsibility to motivate our family members?
Yes.
And do we have the opportunity to mold our family members? No, I got the answer.
Encourage.
Individuals are different, so you love them, minister, take care of them differently.
Mm-hmm.
They're different people.
Introduce them to the Bible if they don't know the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Do we try to have integrity within our families? Mm-hmm. We try to inspire other family members. And a big one is, do we always live in harmony? But L?
Love.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty.
Lenient. Should it be everlasting or lasting relationships?
Lead them to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Love them as they are. Mm-hmm. And then why?
Yell at them when they don't. If you try to tell them, you yell at them.
Then you yell at them. Two things a writer gives. One is he says young and the old cared for. That's what families are to do. And then in families, do we practice this, but possibly not all the time, it's you before me. That's a tough one. I don't have time to deal with this. But a lot of times we do, but we just won't take the time to do it. But today's lesson, back into David's family, is we know that God had told him, because of what he had done, that violence and terror and things were going to happen to his family. But today we're going to talk relating to Amnon, who was the son of David, Absalom. There's a person in here called Jonadab, and a young lady named Tamar. Now, we know David had multiple wives, so he had multiple children. And I'm trying to get all of this, straight this week. But Amnon, being David's son, let's say, he was infatuated with Tamar, who was the daughter of another, of, let's say, Amnon's brother. So that was, if you want to say, his stepsister. It tells us in here that Amnon was just infatuated with Tamar. And we go back to our family and things. As the story goes, Amnon got so infatuated with her is that Jonadab came to him and talked to him. He devised a plan for him to pretend that he was ill, that he was sick, and that he requested Tamar to come and take care of him. So what happened? It wasn't a sickness. It was a sickness, but not an illness. But I guess we could call it an illness too. His infatuation was such, he wanted to have a sexual relationship with Tamar. That's how bad he had gotten. And that's what happened. Is they brought Tamar in, the young lady in, for her to take care of him, but in while she's there, pretty much, if you want, we'll talk, he raped her. Now, this kind of gets, I would say, tricky, but if you were, I'm putting this, I'm the only, well, me and Mr. Walter, only two men in here. If we were so infatuated with a person that we wanted to have a relationship with them, and that act took place, would that satisfy our needs, or would it just be just a stepping stone in our way of life? Just reading this, I think what finally happens is sometimes in life we get so caught up, let's say, in a situation, maybe a movement that's going on, that's our whole thought process in our life. That's all we think about. And then when we achieve or come to that point to where we act upon our thoughts or participate in something that we've thought about and it's over, it really didn't mean anything to us. Because Amnon, after he had done this to Tamar, he was ready to just get rid of her. Leave. I'm through with you. You would think that he would have maybe tried to console her, express his love for her, if there was love involved, but mainly it was just lust. That's the whole situation now. So what happens when we sin against other people?
It comes back and bites you eventually.
It bites you, but does it hurt the other person too?
Yes.
Well, after this had happened, Absalom, who is the brother of Tamar, he gets so upset, he plots in a way he wants to get rid of Amnon. So the story goes along that Tamar, being who she was in royalty. I mean, her life was set. And probably in those days, if this had not happened to her, her life would have been molded, let's say, and then she would have married into royalty. But at this point, it's all gone. It's all taken away from her. She's possibly not even accepted in the little community, let's say, that she lives in because of this action.
As bad as it is today, back then it was just
horrible.
And it wasn't even her fault.
No. No. So Absalom, and then it comes back to Jonadab, they come back with this plan. It's time to shear the sheep. And they have a big royal festivity as this goes on. So they plan, you're going to have all of David's family there. We're going to get them in the party. We're going to get them drunk. And then you can get rid of Amnon. So it's kind of coming back to haunt Amnon because he, in a way, deceived Tamar, and now he is being deceived in this plot here. As it happened, and it got back to David, stories came to David that all of his kids were dead. There had been this big party, and then there had been this carrying on, and all your children are dead. Now, if you're David, and we go back, look where David has come from and what he's gotten, how would you feel? Would you be devastated? Would you have a guilt-ridden feeling in your body that this is all because of my actions, that all of this has taken place? But Jonadab, and this writer, he kind of brings that. Jonadab, like I said, he helped Amnon. He had a plot there. But Jonadab was a person who was, if you want to say, real conniving. He had that spirit about him. He wasn't really in the royalty. He wasn't really that far in the family. But are there people that, like Jonadab, okay, I've set this up and made this happen, and now I've helped set this up, and now I'm going to the king. I'm going to David, and I'm going to tell him, no, your children are not dead. You know, look at me. I'm bringing you the truth. Are there people who use instances like this in life to try to advance themselves in your favor? But it says in 2 Samuel 13, verse 36, when Jonadab said to the king, "See, the king's sons of here, it has happened just as your servant said." And as he finished speaking, the king's sons came in, wailing loudly. The king, too, and all of his servants wept very bitterly. Why do people, or are there people who try to get in the middle of things when they really have no business being there in the first place? You know?
I have them sister-in-laws, I know.
But did David, it says that the question comes up, did David really know how evil Jonadab was? You wouldn't think so, but now if you're David and you're the king and all this is happening, you look up and there's your son who he's supposedly dead, but he appears, but you also know the wrong he's committed earlier in life. What do you do? You love your children, hopefully no matter what. You might not approve of everything that they do in life, but they're still your children. But does it come to a point to where you have to separate yourself a little bit? You know, because I've heard this from other people, I love you because you're my child, but because of the circumstances in your life, I can't be a part of that anymore. Tough love.
Yeah.
It's a fine line. It really is.
I tell my kids I love you, but there's times I sure don't like
you. Like I always tell our girl, I am their very best friend in the world, because you know friends are different than your parents. But I'm your mother first. So mothers outweigh friends. So that's where the separation you have to start.
Mm-hmm. But if you put ourselves in David's life, let's say, if you were that powerful and you had that many concubines and that many children, could you love them the way they needed to be loved? Would you have the time to nurture every aspect of their life like a father should? Because the writer pointed out that the children could project an image of their father, but they couldn't get inside of their father because he'd really never taken the time to get to know them. And I thought this was interesting. It says David's devotion to them was based on an illusion. I mean, I thought about this. Susan and I, what if we had 10 children? Would we attempt to love each one the same?
Now, my mother always told us there was a little different love for each one of us. Mm-hmm. That we were all different. Now, we was 10 in our family. Now, that's what she said. There was different love for all of us.
Yep.
Because we all had different personalities.
Joy?
The Brady's had 11 kids. They had 8 girls and 3 boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But could it become inside of a family like that, and like David, that you just think your kids are doing okay? Because you're out working, you're making a living, you don't get to spend a lot of time with them as far as, let's say, a father's side goes. And maybe the mother is working outside the home too. Kids are okay. You really don't know what's going on in their lives.
When my mother and daddy had 10, we had no care than a lot of these people get today's got too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think about it like that is, y'all were all at home.
Yes. Well,
and
no.
Or
Mom and Daddy had 2 children, waited 10 years, and had 8 more. So. My older sister married when I come along. So.
My granddaddy had 19.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
I remember people telling me about that.
But thinking about this, this writer has a question or a point. We can say that violence occurs within families. But are they always spontaneous, or is it basically an act of revenge? I don't like the way you talked to me the other day, and it might be 2 weeks later, but I'm still thinking about that, and then I explode on you.
Betty cut off the brother's hat with a hoe.
Didn't lie to me, one.
See, that goes back to the F and family. You know, we might forgive something, but you sure don't ever forget it. So see, 2 weeks later, I'm still remembering what happened 2 weeks ago.
Well, we all had our ups and downs, but we knew we loved each other.
But if an act like that occurred in a family to the point of death, is it always the right thing to do? To do that? I mean, to get to murder somebody or kill somebody because they looked at you the wrong way or said something about you the wrong way?
But that's sad in today's society. People do things.
That's, yeah. We think about that, and I bring out this point is, one article I read is, have churches, and we don't blame it all on the church, but have churches gotten away from teaching about the wrongs of sin, and just kind of fluffing it up a little bit?
Pastors now seem like they're afraid to ruffle somebody's feathers. They get mad about it. You know what I'm talking about? We used to have a revival, and they'd bring some hellfire and brimstone, you know. And when we had a revival?
Been a long time.
Been a long time.
It's obsolete anymore.
Don't do that.
But another thing, I think, of course, we're a small church now. But I think with all my heart that when a young person joins a church, there should be somebody in that church would take him and start, I've always said start in John, you know, studying the Bible. Because if he just joins and goes on about his business, I mean,
he doesn't know the basics.
Right.
Yep.
I think we kind of got away from that, but not just this, but other churches. The numbers are so important. You know, you want to see in print that we had 100 baptisms for the year, versus, you know, and numbers get important instead of just, we might have only had one person, but like Betty said, by the time he's gone through and been mentored, that one person can light a fire for other people. Versus the 100 people that just, we had the number, they joined the church, and then they continued to be their own thing.
Right.
Well, that's what I've done. I grew up in the church, and I went to church every Sunday night. If the revival come, we went every night, every day. But I felt like, I believed there was a God, and I knew there was a hell, but I felt like I had to do what Mom and Daddy said. You know what I'm saying? And I did not really learn what faith was until I was right over yonder in that church window. I was in my 40s then. That's when I learned about faith.
Faith. Yeah. A lot of times we think we know, but we really don't know until. But as it ends up, Absalom, knowing that his father's going to be emotional and possibly dangerous, he leaves. He leaves and goes away. It says in verse 37 and 38, it says, Absalom fled and went to Talmah, son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur. But King David mourned for his son every day. He says, after Absalom fled and went to Geshur, he stayed there for 3 years. And the spirit of the king longed to go to Absalom, for he was consoled concerning Amnon's death. So, I mean, really and truly, how should David feel? Should he have a little remorse at this point. I mean, we go back, like you said, he had been warned, because of your actions, this is going to happen. Your whole nation is going to be at risk. Being the king, even though that was his son, he could have had Absalom murdered. But would a father do that? But he, it says, in recalling Absalom, I mean, David is probably angry because he had been misled or led astray by Joab. He just refused to see Absalom. It says Absalom was he a dangerous person? If you provoked him at this point in his life, could he have become dangerous? Or did Absalom, and we'll see later, is he skillful enough to know that if I keep my peace, one day this is all going to be mine? I'm his son. I'm the next heir. But what if the forgiveness never came?
So do we spend the rest of our lives teaching our generations to be bank robbers and think whatever we want, versus after David and Bathsheba, it should have stopped. He should have, like you said, though, he didn't have the ability to love each of those children individually and teach them totally the right and wrong thing. But after what he did, that should have been the end of that chapter, and the rest of his life should have been spent in remorse and teaching his children how to live godly and to make right choices.
But could they have forgiven their father? That's the question that comes to me. We don't know how many children David had, how many wives he had. But, you know, in today's world, you would call it polygamy. There's even been a television show that I know someone that watched it that I can't grasp that. I can't bring that to life.
You know, watch it, but you can't really grasp it. Because how does one man love? I mean, I know the kind of relationship I have with my husband, and I love one person that way. I can't imagine trying to love anybody else. That's exactly it. But then the scriptures also teach us, you know, one man, one woman. So by being biblically, that's the way it should be. And it's just, I don't know.
But think about this as a thought question. We'll close with this. Does sin always lead to separation and broken relationships?
Yes. And sometime in the morgue, over there, you can work at.
But can it also lead to reconciliation and bringing back a family? We think we live in a perfect world. But somebody might question you. Well, if God created all this, why did he bring this into the world?
He made evil for his purposes like he does good. Mm-hmm.
What if Adam and Eve, we wouldn't be having this problem?
Yeah.
All this killing and like all that, and it pertaining to the population and the population now. Well, there was as much killing back then as they are now.
Yeah.
But
it's
probably worse.
You hear about it more now.
Yeah.
Having news and social media.
The population is so big.
Well, and you know, 30 generations ago, were they as anxious as we are as Christians for Jesus to return? When you look back, was my great grandparents anxious to know that he could come back any day, like for the wars, the Korean and the war? Were they as anxious and watching as much as we are? You know, does it just, each generation, are they still looking like we are?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this may be in your study guide is I lost it right here. The warning, 2 Samuel chapter 13, it should be a warning to us that sin does destroy relationships. But the writer brings, he says, assure the group that Jesus can restore everything sin destroys. But add hopeful but clauses to each of the bulleted statements that are in your little work there. It says, sin leads to grief, failing to satisfy and to deliver on the promises made, but Jesus gives joy and never fails to satisfy. So, you know, there are ways, if there's someone you're close to or talking with that's a lot of sin in their life, you could use that. Can you see how sin is hurting your life? But can you also not see how Jesus can help you come out of that and bring joy back to your life?
Don't you think with all this that goes on with David, do you ever think he sits around and wishes he and Jonathan was back where they started?
Might have been.
He still had Jonathan, and they were doing their own little thing, and he didn't have all this mess in his life.
But
you know, we all look back at things in the past and, you know, wish that things had done it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we've lost people that I could just talk to them one more time. You know, we've mm-hmm. all been through that. So you just wonder if David was person just like us, and he wish he and Jonathan were just out with their little slingshots doing their own thing, and he had the weight of the world on him, his children, his country, what the Lord expected from him. You just think he was just over it. And we get that way sometimes. We learn so much in our life. We get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there again is.
When we get to the verse student points, I'm done.
Is always wanting more and better a correct way of life? You know, in a lot of cases it works well, but in a lot of cases, you know, I've gained all this, and you know, my relationship with my wife is not what it used to be, so I'm going to be like David. But it doesn't work.
Y'all plan on a funeral? I'll be right up front.
I thought you were supposed to murder when you said that.
We're not.
And your daughter's getting ready to commit murder over here.
All right.
I'll let you take all of
it. We were
I'm used to that.
Well, we can keep on this lesson. I enjoyed this talk.
We enjoyed this class. That was good. Always good. He puts up with us, listens to us. Anybody else got anything?
Of course, I've been watching it on TV, but it ain't like being here.
No, not that personal touch, is it?
No, not like being with y'all.
Okay, all right. Let's stand up in addiction.
Words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my Redeemer.